Gitu. Oh, gitu. Ini kita lihat. Langa. This is the complication of us not getting documents like we normally insist the day before. And it's reflecting badly on the committee. So I hope this won't happen again. It's really a bad start for a final day. And I think every committee would normally insist that when there's issues of color coding, it has to be colored, the documents that you get. If there's problems, make sure that you sleep having made an effort to see how copies can best be sorted by members. And I don't see the point of us going through this effectively if we haven't read documents the day before anyway. Right, so we're starting with this one, with the three colors. The black, green, gold. Honorable Lorimer, we're starting with the document that's got black, green, and gold. Does it sound familiar, Honorable Schmidt?
That explains a lot, don't
you? Yes, we're starting with the document that's got black, green, and gold today. Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill, as introduced to the National Assembly, proposed Section 75, explanatory summary of bill published in Government Gazette No. 36523 of the 31st of May 2013. The English text is the official text of the bill. Areas highlighted in green indicate further amendments by DMR. Areas highlighted in yellow indicate new amendments by DMR. Areas highlighted in red indicates proposed amendments by NGOs and the industry. Right. On top there is for general explanatory note. Words in bold, type in square brackets indicate omission from existing enactments. Words underlined with a solid line indicate insertions in existing enactments. To amend the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act 2002, as amended by the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act 2008, Act No. 49 of 2008, so as to remove ambiguities that exist within the Act, to provide for the regulation of associated minerals, partitioning of rights and enhanced provisions relating to beneficiation of minerals, mineral product or form of petroleum, to promote national energy security, to streamline administrative processes, to align the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act with the Geoscience Act 1993, which is Act No. 100 of 1993, as amended by the Geoscience Amendment Act 2010, Act No. 16 of 2010, to provide for enhanced sanctions, to improve the regulatory system, and to provide for matters connected herewith. Be it enacted by the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. Amendment of Section 1 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 1 of Act 49 of 2008. Number 1. Section 1 of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act 2002, herein referred to as the Principal Act, is thereby amended. A. By the insertion before the definition of beneficiation of the following definitions. Appraisal operations means any operation, study, activity to appraise and evaluate the extent and volume of petroleum within a discovery made by the holder in the exploration areas for purposes of determining whether the discovery is in such quantities as will permit the economic development thereof on its own or in combination with other existing discoveries as part of a unitized development. Appraisal work program means the approved appraisal work program indicating the operations to be conducted in the appraisal area during the validity of the exploration right, including A, the details regarding the appraisal activities, phases, equipment to be used, and B, estimated expenditures for different appraisal activities and phases. Associated mineral means any mineral which occurs in mineralogical association with and in the same core deposit as primary mineral being mined in terms of a mining right, where it is physically impossible to mine the primary mineral without also mining the mineral associated with. Authorized person means any person designated by the minister in terms of Section 91. B, by the substitution of the definition of beneficiation of the following definition. Beneficiation in relation to any mineral resource means the following. A, primary stage, which includes any process of the winning, recovering, extracting, concentrating, refining, calcining, classifying, crushing, screening, washing, reduction, smelting, or something there that's not clear with me. Creation thereof. What's the last word? CL, ne?
Secret classification.
No. My line is double anyway. Let me read that again. Beneficiation means the following. Primary stage, which includes any process of the winning, recovering, extracting, concentrating, refining, calcining, classifying, right? Crushing, screening, washing, reduction, smelting, or gasification thereof. Is that now correct? B, secondary stage, which includes any action of converting a concentrate or mineral resource into an intermediate product. C, tertiary stage, which include any action of further converting that product into a refined product suitable for purchase by minerals-based industries and enterprises. And D, the final stage, which is the action of producing properly processed, cut, polished, or manufactured products or articles from minerals except in the industry and trade as fully and finally 20 processed or manufactured and value-added products or articles. Transformation, value addition or downstream beneficiation of a mineral product or form of petroleum and petroleum resource, or a combination of minerals to a higher value product over baselines to be determined by the minister, which can either be consumed locally or exported. C, by deletion of the definition of board. D, community means a group of historically disadvantaged persons with interest or rights in a particular area of land on which the member have or exercise communal rights in terms of an agreement, custom or law, provided that where, as a consequence of the provisions of this Act, negotiations or consultations with the community is required, the community shall include the members or part of the community directly affected by mining or land occupied by such members or part of the community. A coherent social group of persons within a district municipality as defined in the Local Government Municipal Structures Act of 1998, Act No. 117, with interests or rights in a particular area of land which the members have or exercise communally in terms of an agreement, custom or law. E, by the insertion after the definition of community of the following definitions. Commercial discovery means the discovery of petroleum within the exploration area in such quantities as will permit the economic development thereof on its own or in combination with other existing discoveries or as part of a unitized development. Concentration of rights refers to an instance where an applicant is already the holder of a prospecting right or rights, a mining right or rights, 45 or a mining permit or permits and the granting of an additional prospecting right or rights, mining right or rights or mining permit or permits will defeat the objects of Section 2D. Constitution means the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa of 1996. F, by insertion after the definition of contractual royalties of the following definitions. Any comments? Controlling interest in relation to A company is the majority of the voting rights attaching to all classes of shares in the company. B, any other business other than a company referred to in paragraph A means any interest which enables the holder thereof to exercise directly or indirectly any control whatsoever over the activities or assets of the business. G, by the deletion of the definition of designated agency. H, by the substitution for the definition of department of the following definition. We're all on page 4. Department means the Department of Mineral... Okay, department means the department of, which was Minerals and Energy, Mineral Resources. I, by the insertion after the definition of department of the following definitions. Designated mineral means such minerals as the minister may designate for beneficiation purposes as and when the need arises in the Gazette. Such minerals which constitute input into local beneficiation programs in line with national development imperatives. Developmental pricing conditions refer to a pricing methodology. Okay. Honorable Lorena.
Thanks, Madam Chair. National development imperatives. What are they? Who decides them? What happens if they change? When do they change? Could we have some clarity?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Chair, when we get to the proposed amendment under Clause 26 dealing with beneficiation, we've dealt exactly with the concept of national development imperatives and how it will be, what it is, basically, and we've qualified it with regard to national development imperatives with regard to energy security, but it's all dealt with under Clause 26, and in addition thereto, we also have an empowering clause dealing with regulations on it. So can we can I just ask when we get to Section 26 that we deal with that? Otherwise, we're going to come back to it going a little bit. We're going into the detail of Clause 26. But just as a indication to the Honourable Member, what he's saying is that we've qualified national development imperatives to mean imperatives such as energy security, industrialization, and infrastructure development. We've qualified to mean those, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Schmidt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we look at the definition of Roman 1 and paragraph on page 4, It should read as follows, as I understand correctly. It says, by the insertion after the definition of the bottom of the following definitions, designated minerals means, and then anything in square bracket and in bold is deleted. So we read it then that it should be read that by the insertion after the definition of the bottom of the following definitions, designated minerals means such minerals which constitute input into local beneficiation programs in line with the national development imperatives. Is that correct? That's how it should be. All the yellows and the bolds and the buffs and the squares and the minuses, that's how it's supposed to be. Am I right?
Thank you, Chair. The Honourable Smith is correct. The bold is what we're reading out of the text of the main provisions of the bold, and the underlining is the insertions, and the yellow ones is the latest proposal that we have before the committee this morning.
But the bold in square brackets is what is being deleted. That's very important.
Should we be reading that section?
I suggest not, Madam Chair, because then it confuses that what we're trying to
It should have been in the first place. Then. If it's letters that have been deleted.
I think it just needs, you know, we just need to look very carefully when we read that section after the square bracket. It's confusing, but it shouldn't be read with due respect.
Okay. The red remains because if you look at the cover, it says that the red areas highlighted in red indicating proposed amendments by the NGOs in the industry. It is now out of the public hearing. That report. Are you with me? Okay, can we go to J? J, by the insertion after definition of Director General of the following definition, differentiated pricing means the discounted price that mining companies will sell minerals to domestic mineral beneficiating entities. The level of discount will be determined on a value chain by value chain basis. Discovery means the discovery by the holder of an exploration right of petroleum within the exploration area. Okay, by the insertion after the definition of exploration work program of the following definitions. Free carried interest means a share in the rate profit, a share in the net profits derived from the exercise of an exploration right or production right issued in terms of this act as acquired by the state in terms of Section 87 or Section 84(6) as the case may be, despite the state not contributing to the capital 20 expenditure. Is that 20 just a place figure or was it meant to have a percentage?
It's very confusing
something
because
not
right, that's green after free carried interest and then it says bracket, square bracket mean. From there I take it that everything is deleted.
In the square bracket.
Until 20 expenditure.
So I should read free carried interest means interest derived from holding shares of which the holder enjoys all the rights of a shareholder but has no obligation to subscribe or contribute equity capital for the shares.
I think this is going to be a double job. Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to assist the committee, I think maybe what's important is that what should be read is the the wording, except for those that's in bold. That's because bold represents what's being deleted in the text. So it should.
Can I propose something?
Yes, Chair.
Why don't you do the reading?
Okay.
Because sure. I also want to comment. And I think you'd be able to give better understanding than myself right now.
I'll try my best.
Okay. Yeah, but remembering now the square brackets that it's what is supposed to go out, isn't it? Unless somebody has an objection or something different to add.
Thank you.
That's fine. Let's go.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just take the messages back, Chair, to the paragraph J? The definition, the insertion of the definition of Director General of the following definition, differentiated pricing, that should be excluded this year because we're no longer dealing with that in the bill in view of our latest proposals. We've dealt with that under the committee dealing with beneficiation, which the chair asked us to come back with proposals. So we'll deal with that under the new proposal. So. Differentiated pricing is dealt with later on. The same with free carried interest, Chair. That should also not be part of this particular document. So we apologize for having it still in here. So that should not be included. So for the purposes of today...
Can you read it then correctly?
No, Chair, we will then ignore this paragraph J, and we will ignore paragraph A in this document on page 4.
Honourable, this is going to be a problem.
As I'm telling you, why did they write these things if they are deleted already or show something that says deleted? Because if you don't know, you are going to read this thing. It's really confusing now. We shouldn't have read this. You shouldn't have written this. We just don't.
And now the risk is that you might omit this going forward. And it could have been an important part of the document. Of the bill. Honourable Schmidt?
Madam Chair, yes. I'm just having a look at paragraph J. I'm sure it's only differentiated pricing definition that is to be deleted, not discovery. Or discovery, and in K, there's a free carried interest in this gasification. So do both definitions under those clauses come out, or only those which you refer to?
Chair, it's only the definition of differentiated pricing and free carried interest, but discovery remains. And gasification.
Then I'm going to have a concern with the free carried interest now. How do you handle that? Because I do think we discussed that in detail in the bill.
Thank you, Chair. When we deal with Section 86A in the bill, we've addressed the issue of SACT free carried interest, Chair. So the proposed amendment as is, we know, should be omitted from the draft. So when we get to 87A, we will deal with those, Chair.
But this part is what we're dealing with when it comes to definitions, is it?
Yes, Chair.
I'm not feeling comfortable with it. Honourable Schmidt?
Madam Chair, I think they intended a Rolls-Royce of a schematic diagram of amendments, but it's becoming very confusing. But can I just ask, are we going through this bill with it on a clause-by-clause basis to eventually vote on it? I'm just trying to understand what the purpose of this morning's exercise is. Thank you.
You remember last week we made our additions in terms of the cause-by-clause issues that we're discussing of the bill. Now today, this included what we had recommended last week, or inputs that we had given. Now, the today session, the idea was that they would have included all that, and for us to go through it as we should, line by line, read this whole document, this whole bill, so that if there's any other issues that have been left out or that we feel should be included further, are then addressed.
I personally don't have any problem with this, except it's how many pages? It's about 45,
45.
It's a process. It's going to take us a few weeks, I suppose.
It's a process we have to follow.
Okay.
Because we're not going to vote now. We're not going to vote now on it.
All right, so this is basically just going through again with a fine tooth.
We're going to again to have final document of the committee after the deliberation of last week. Remember last week we just had for the past 2 days, we just had inputs and we didn't really have that compiled into one bill as it is now. And that's what we're checking, if all those issues have been included. And I don't think we have a choice but to go through it page by page. Unfortunately.
Can I then support your recommendation that the state law advisor just read through it and, you know, so we can scratch out what doesn't belong where?
Okay. Yeah, and what doesn't belong, but don't mention it. Okay.
Sure.
I will follow. Honorable Tinta?
If we're not reading the document line by line today, when are we going to have the final document? Because next week is the final day for Parliament to be sitting.
We will have a meeting next week. We're going to have another meeting. In any case, there's dates that have been communicated for another committee week. Are we fine now? Can we continue? Now our job is not done today. Let's go on.
Chair, just before I proceed, there's another document that's been circulated. I'm not sure if Secretary, it's the A-list.
The A-list, yeah.
Yeah, it's a draft A-list. What we've tried with the colored document is just to indicate how it will look as a new B-ball, basically. That was what we attempted to do. But the A-list basically indicates what's been taken out and what's been inserted. So this is actually the document, but in order for us to see what will look like when the changes are incorporated, that is why we prepared the colored document. But in fact, the A-list is the main document, the draft ALIS at the moment. So I'll proceed with the colored document, but we have some record, you know, to verify what
to verify what you changed.
Yes, sir.
Okay, there too there's now the yellow, and there's red, and there's blue. What does it mean? Or at least there's underlining.
Yes, Chair. The ones in blue...
In terms of the A-list.
In terms of the A-list, the blue indicates where we've made changes since our last meeting. The red was changes that we have discussed at the last meeting, but since the last meeting, it's blue, basically, Chair.
Okay. Let's continue then.
On page 4, paragraph L, it's section 1 of the Principal Act. It's by the substitution of the definition of historically disadvantaged persons of the following definition. So now it will read, an historically disadvantaged South African refers to South African citizens, a category of persons or community disadvantaged by unfair discrimination before the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1993, Act number 200 of 1993, came into operation, which should be representative of the democratics of the country. Paragraph M is insertion of the definition of historically disadvantaged South Africans, which read as follows. Historic residues or stockpiles means any debris you discard, tailings, slimes, screening, slurry, waste rock, foundry sand, beneficiation, plant waste, ash, or any other product derived from or incidental to a mining operation and which is or was stockpiled, stored, or accumulated for potential reuse, or which is or was disposed of by the holder of any right or title, open brackets, including common law ownership, close bracket, other than prospecting right, mining permit, exploration right or production right issued in terms of this Act. Paragraph M, by the insertion after the definition of holder of the following definition. Labour sending areas refers to areas from where a majority of mine workers, both historical and current, are or have been sourced. Paragraph N, by the substitution for the definition of land of the following definition. Land includes the surface of the land and the sea, as well as residue deposits and residue stockpiles on such land where appropriate. Paragraph O, by the insertion after the definition of land of the following definition. Listed company means a listed company as defined by the Income Tax Act 1962, Act number 58 of 1962. Paragraph B, by the substitution for the definition of mine of the following definition. Mine means when used as a noun, any excavation in the earth, including any portion under the sea or under the water, or in any residue deposit, as well as any borehole, whether being worked on or not, made for the purpose of searching for a winning or mineral. Any other place where a mineral resources is being extracted, including the mining area and all buildings, structures, machinery, residue stockpiles, access roads, and or objects situated on such area and which are used or intended to be used in connection with such searching, winning or extraction or processing of such mineral resource. And paragraph B, used as a verb, is the mining of any mineral in or under the earth, water or any residue deposit, whether by underground classification, open working or otherwise, and include any operation or activity incidental thereto, in or on or under the relevant mine area. Paragraph Q, by the substitution for the definition of mining area of the following definition. Mining area in relation to a mining right or a mining permit means the area for which that right or permit is granted. B, in relation to any environmental, health, social, and labor matter and any residual, latent, or other impact thereto. Includes, 1, any surface of land within adjacent or non-adjacent in the area as contemplated in paragraph A, but upon which relate to incidental operation of being undertaken and impacting on the environment. 2, any surface of land on which such mining infrastructure is located under the control of the holder of such mining right, reclamation permit or mining permit, and which such holder is entitled to use in connection with the operations performed or to be performed under such right or permit. And 3, all buildings, structures, machinery, residue or other stockpiles or objects situated on or in the area as contemplated in subparagraphs 1 and 2. By the substitution for the definition of mining operation of the following definition. Mining operation means any operation relating to the act of mining and matters directly incidental thereto, including residue stockpiles. Paragraph S, by the substitution for the definition of minister of the following definition. Minister means the minister of mineral resources. Paragraph T, by the insertion after the definition of officer of the following definition. Organ of state has the meaning assigned to it in terms of section 239 of the Constitution. Paragraph U, by the substitution for the definition of prospecting area of the following definition. Prospecting area in relation to a mining right or a mining permit means the area for which that right or permit is granted, or B, in relation to any environmental, health, social and labor matter and any residual, latent or other impact thereto includes any land or surface within adjacent or non-adjacent to that area contemplated in paragraph A, but upon which related or incidental operations are being undertaken and impacting on environment. Paragraph D, by the incision after the definition of prospecting work program of the following definitions. Public entity means a public entity as defined in the Public Finance Management Act 1999, Act 1 of 1999. Then paragraph W, by the substitution for the definition of Regional Mining Development and Environment Committee of the following definition. Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee means a Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee established in terms of section 10, capital A. Paragraph X, by the substitution for the definition of residue stockpile of the following definition. Residue stockpile means any debris, discard tailings, slimes, screen, slurry, waste rock, foundry sand, mineral processing plant waste, ash, or any other product derived from or incidental to a mining operation and which is stockpiled, stored, or accumulated within the mine area for potential reuse or which is disposed of by the holder of a mining right, mining permit, or production right, or an old order right, including historic mines and dumps created before the implementation of this Act. In paragraph Y, we have new proposals with regard to two new definitions which we've inserted. By the insertion of the definition of state royalties of the following definitions. Security of supply means orderly supply of designated minerals or mineral products for local beneficiation in order to support and sustain national development imperatives. State participation means the right of the state to participate in petroleum development at exploration and production operations, including inter alia, free carried interest, which shall in turn mean interest allocated to the state in exploration or production operations without any financial obligations on the state, and may include production sharing agreements in production operations and representation at the Joint Project Committee of Exploration or Production Operation.
Madam Chair? Again, I don't know whether you want to defer this, but could we get some explanation either from yourself or from the DMR as to what these new paragraphs mean? Production sharing, that seems to be something new. Could you explain?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, we dealt with both of these definitions under the beneficiation, first security of supply, then state participation under the new 87A. But if the department maybe could just speak maybe to the motivation as to how it is, I think it's more appropriate for the department from policy perspective, Chair. Thank you.
I suppose just an explanation. Okay, explain. Just a bad explanation, so please. If we just to school. Okay.
Thank you
for that, Musa.
On a procedural matter, Chair, in an event, some of the issues, clarity is sought, and the department must explain. Whereas we may have discussed, in a previous meeting we have discussed, we have expressed some views, maybe similar to that. How do we proceed? It's fine to see clarity. But also, if you should express a view hiding behind clarity. No, it's fine to see clarity.
It's fine to see clarity. That's why I'm saying, Musa, you mustn't go into a history.
Okay.
Just explaining the English, basically.
Not really that, Chair, because if... Well, let me...
No. But remember, we did engage
yes,
last week.
Yes, we did discuss.
But the question is, if you can just explain the meaning, isn't it? The meaning of this particular word. That's all we want. That's why I was saying, Musa, don't go into the history and what you want to motivate. You've done enough of that last week. Because we said, after all, that you just here. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. We have removed petroleum from Section 26 and have then said that because free carried interest on its own is a mechanism for state participation, and instead of defining free carried interest, we would rather define state participation in its entirety, which includes free carried interest, a sort of production sharing agreement, as well as representation of state in the joint project committee, and that the production sharing agreement and free carried interest are not should not be seen as mutually exclusive necessarily. Thank you.
I'm so unclear, Madam Chair, about what a production sharing agreement is.
In state law, it was a specific advice on it.
In section 86A of the document, that's a substantive provision dealing with state participation on exploration and production rights. And I'm not sure, Chair, if I can speak to that now and just explain in that context, because basically the definition basically speaks to Section 86A, which deals with what state participation will work. But for what we have now, Chair,
What page is Section 86?
Page 40 of my version, Chair. My copy.
Page 40?
Clause 62. It's numbered 86A, capital A.
Somebody must check the notice of page 40.
Mm-hmm. It will be clause 62.
Okay.
Yeah, I will just read the definition first before I discuss the state participation on exploration production. State participation means the right of a state to participate in petroleum development at exploration and production operations, including, inter alia, one, free carried interest, which shall mean, in turn, interest allocated to the state in exploration or production operations without any financial obligation on the state, and may include production sharing agreements in production operations, and representation at the joint project committee of the exploration or production operation. That's the definition that informs the concept of state participation when we look at clause 62 on page 40. I'll read the clause, Chair.
Sorry, but is the question not what is...
Production operation.
Production operation, is that what you want to understand, Honorable Lorem?
Production sharing, yeah. As far as I'm concerned, from a legal perspective, a production sharing agreement is exactly what it says there. There's an agreement with regard to the proceeds of production that will be shared for the purposes of state participation. With regard to any further motivation, I think the bottoms will be best suited to say what exactly that will entail. But in my view, from a legal perspective, it would mean a sharing in the production of the operation, basically, and that would be by agreement. That is one of the elements that will inform the amount of state participation, Chair.
So just to get this here, if there's an agreement that the state gets 30% of production out of every 100 barrels of oil, 30 of them will belong to the state. Is that how it works?
There is a provision under 86A which sets out the maximum of state interest referred to in subsection 1 and 5, which is 50% per petroleum operation. So that's the maximum. It can't be more than that in terms of what we have under 6. Thank you, Dave. The next definition under state participation on page 6 now again. Strategic minerals means such minerals as the minister may declare to be strategic minerals as and when the need arises in the gazette. Paragraph 8. By the substitution for the definition of the C of the following definition. The C, and this means, let me just get this quickly there, it's just a...
Now where's the bracket closing there?
Okay, thank you, Jay. I'll just read on. Paragraph D, that the C has the meaning assigned to it by the National Environmental Management Integrated Coastal Management Act. 2008, 24 of 2008, and includes the territorial orders, the exclusive economic zone, and the continental shelf as contemplated in the Marine Zones Act 94, Act number 15 of 1994. Paragraph Z, capital A, by the substitution for the definition of this act of the following definition. This act includes, paragraph A, the regulations, and any term or conditions to which any permission, right, consent, exemption, approval, notice, closure, certificate, or directive issues given, granted, or approved in terms of this Act. And the codes of good practice for South African minerals industry, housing and living conditions standards for the mineral industry, and the amended broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter for South African mining and minerals industry. Chair, that is clause 1 on the bill. Clause 2, amendment of section 2 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by section 2 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 2 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by substitution in subsection 2 for paragraphs D, E, and I of the following paragraphs, respectively. D, substantially and meaningfully expand opportunities for historically disadvantaged South Africans to enter into and actively participate in the mineral and petroleum industries and to benefit from the exploitation of the nation's mineral and petroleum resources. E. Promote economic growth and optimal mineral and petroleum resources development in the Republic, including development of downstream beneficiation industries. I. Ensure that holders of mining and production rights contribute towards the socio-economic development of the areas in which they are operating, including labor-sending areas. Clause 3, Amendment of Section 5A of Act 28 of 2002 as inserted by Section 5 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 5A of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by the substitution for the section heading of the following heading, Prohibition relating to an illegal act. B, by the substitution for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words, No person may prospect or remove, mine, conduct technical cooperation operations, reconnaissance operations, explore for and produce any mineral or petroleum or commence with any work incidental thereto on any area without. Clause 4, substitution of Section 7 of Act 28 of 2002. The following section is hereby substituted for Section 7 of the Principal Act. The heading, Division of Republic, Territorial Waters, Continental Shelf, and Exclusive Economic Zone into Regions. For the purposes of this Act, the Minister must, by notice in the Gazette, divide the Republic, including the sea, into regions. Clause 5, substitution of Section 9 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 6 of Act 49 of 2008. The following section is hereby substituted for Section 9 of the Principal Act. Invitation for applications. I will move over to the next page, Chair, where I'll read the new section. The part in red. 9.1. The Minister must, by notice in the Gazette, invite applications, including in respect of land relinquished or abandoned or which was previously subject to any right, permit, or permission in terms of this Act, which has been cancelled or relinquished or which has been abandoned or which has lapsed, for reconnaissance permissions, reconnaissance permit, prospecting rights, exploration rights, mining rights, technical cooperation permit, production rights and mining permits in respect of any area of land, block or blocks, and may prescribe in such notice the period within which any application may be lodged with the regional manager and procedures which shall apply in respect of such lodgement. 2. Any person may, after identifying an area of land, block or blocks, and the type of mineral product, or form of petroleum in or on such area or land, request the Minister to invite applications in such area of land, block or blocks, in terms of subsection 1. 3. Applications received in terms of subsection 1 shall be processed in accordance with the provisions of the Act, including the terms and conditions upon which applications may be accepted, rejected, granted, or refused. 4. Any invitation referred to in subsection 1 shall not include any mineral product, or form of petroleum and land in respect of which another person holds a right or permit, excluding a reconnaissance permit, reconnaissance permission, and an application made in terms of section 11.2a, or an application for a right or a permit which has already been lodged prior to such invitation and which remains be granted or refused. Clause 6, the substitution for Section 10 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 7 of Act 49 of 2008. The following section is hereby substituted for Section 10 of the Principal Act. Consultation with interested and affected parties. 10.1. Within 14 days after accepting an application lodged in terms of section 16, 22 or 27. The regional manager and the applicant must in the prescribed manner A. make known that an application for a prospecting right, mining right or mine permit has been accepted in respect of the land in question, and B. call upon interested and affected persons to submit their comments and objections regarding the application from the date of objections regarding applications to the regional manager within the prescribed period from the date of the notice. Sub 2. If a person objects to the granting of a prospecting right or mine permit, the regional manager must refer the objection to the regional mining development and environmental committee to consider the objections and advise the minister thereon. B. And may refer the objection and comments to the applicant to consult with the person objecting and submit the result of the consultation within the prescribed period from the date of such referral. C. Should a consultation contemplated in subsection 2B result in an agreement, such agreement must be reduced to writing and forwarded to the regional manager for noting and onward transmission to the regional mining development and environmental committee. Clause 7, insertion of sections 10A, 10B, 10C, 10D, 10E, 10F and 10G in Chapter 4 of Act 28 of 2002. The following sections are hereby inserted after Section 10 of the Principal Act. Establishment of Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee, 10A. The Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee is hereby established for each region contemplated in Section 7 of the Act. The functions of Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee, 10B. The committee must, A, advise the minister on objections received in terms of Section 10.2 and B. may make recommendations to the minister in terms of Section 54.5. Composition of Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee, 10C1. The members appointed to the committee must have expertise in mineral and mining development, mine environmental management, petroleum exploration and production. 2. The committee must consist of not more than 14 members appointed by the minister and shall include A. the regional manager as the chairperson, the principal inspector of mines for that region, and C. representatives of relevant state departments within the national, provincial, and local sphere of government or relevant organs of state within each sphere. 3. The minister may appoint a representative from any relevant public entity from time to time, provided that such representative shall not have a right to vote at any meeting of the committee.
Are we fine with that? Can we move on?
10D, disqualification of members. A person may not be appointed as a member of the committee, A, unless he or she is a South African citizen who reside in the Republic permanently, or B, if he or she is an unrehabilitated insolvent, has been declared to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic, or has been convicted of an offence committed after the date of commencement of the Constitution and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine, unless the person has received a grant of amnesty or a free pardon before the date of his or her appointment. 10E, vacation of office. A member of the committee must vacate his or her office if he or she, A, becomes subject to any disqualification contemplated in Section 10D, or in case of an official in the service of the state ceases to be such an official. B, has been absent for more than 2 consecutive meetings of the committee without leave. C, tenders his or her resignation in writing to the minister and the minister accepts the resignation, or D, C, D is removed from the office of other minister under subsection 2. Sub 2, the minister may remove any member of the committee from office on account of misconduct or inability to perform functions of his or her office properly, or if the member has engaged in any activity that may undermine the integrity of the committee, which activities may include, 1, participation in an investigation, hearing, or decision concerning a matter in respect of which that person has a financial or personal interest. 2, making private use of or profiting from any confidential information obtained as a result of performing his or her functions as a member of the committee. Or 3, divulging any information referred to in subparagraph 2 to any third party except as required under this Act or the Promotion of Access to Information Act 2000, Act number 2 of 2000. 10F, terms of office and filling of vacancies. 1, a member of the committee holds office for a period not exceeding 3 years. The minister may reappoint any member of the committee at the expiry of his or her term for another period not exceeding 3 years. If a member of the committee vacates the office or dies, the minister may fill the vacancy by appointing a person in accordance with section 10C3 of the for the unexpired period of the term of office of his or her predecessor. In G, reports of Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee. In addition to any specific report which the minister may request from the committee in respect of any of the regions, the committee must before 31 March of each year submit a report to the minister setting out the activities of the committee during the year preceding that date and must include a business plan for the ensuing year. Clause 8, amendment of Section 11 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 8 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 11 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection, it should be subsection, or you'll fix it. A prospecting right, or a part of a prospecting right, mining right, or a part of a mining right, or an interest in any right in an unlisted company, or controlling interest in a listed companies. Just have to, there's a bit of a lining thing there, gentlemen. I just want to check the. Okay, yeah. I've got a thing there, that thing should not be there. I will just read it again. A prospecting right, or a part of a prospecting right, mining right, or a part of a mining right, or an interest in any such right, in an unlisted company, or any controlling interest in a listed company, which companies hold a prospecting right or mining right or an interest in any such right, may not be ceded, transferred, encumbered, let, sublet, assigned, or alienated without the prior written consent of minister, as prescribed. B, by the insertion of the subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2A, any transfer of a part of a prospecting right or mining right contemplated in subsection 1 must be granted if A, the application for such transfer is accompanied by an application in terms of section 102 to vary the right. B, the transferee has simultaneously lodged an application in terms of section 16 or 22 as the case may be. C, the application that the applicant has complied with the requirements contemplated in section 17 or 23 as the case may be. And D, the applicant has been granted a prospecting right or a mining right to which the transfer relates. Paragraph C, by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. 3, the consent contemplated in subsection 1 is not required in respect of the encumbrance by or each contemplated in subsection 1 of a right or interest as security to obtain a loan or guarantee for the purpose of funding or financing a prospecting mining right, mining project by any bank as defined in the Banks Act 1990, Act No. 94 of 1990, or any other financial institution approved for that purpose by the Registrar of Banks referred to in the Banks Act 1994 of 1990 on request by the Minister, or C, any public entity, if the bank, public entity, or financial institution in question undertakes in writing that any sale in execution or any other disposal pursuant to a foreclosure of the mortgage will be subject to consent in terms of subsection 1. And D, by the substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection. Any transfer, cession, letting, subletting, alienation, encumbrance by mortgage or variation of a prospecting right or mining right, as the case may be contemplated in this section, must be lodged for registration at the Mineral and Petroleum Title Registration Office within the prescribed period from the date of execution. Clause 9. Amendment of Section 13 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 9 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 13 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. Any person who wishes to apply to the Minister for a reconnaissance permission must, subject to Section 9, lodge the application, and paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 3 for the following subsection. If the application does not comply with the requirements of this section, the regional manager must reject application and notify the applicant in writing within the prescribed period of the receipt of the application with written reasons for such decision. Clause 10, amendment of Section 14 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 10 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 14 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 3 for the following subsection. If the Minister refuses to grant a reconnaissance permission, the Minister must, within the prescribed period of the decision, notify the applicant in writing with reasons for such decision. 11. Amendment of Section 16 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 12 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 16 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. Any person who wishes to apply to the Minister for a prospecting right must, subject to Section 9, lodge the application. Paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 2 of paragraph C of the following paragraph. Chair, that is also something that we've also omitted, so that's no longer there, so I'll skip that one. C, by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection 3, if the application does not comply with the requirements of the section, the regional manager must notify the applicant in writing within the prescribed period of the receipt of the application. D, by the substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection. If the regional manager accepts the application, the regional manager must, within the prescribed period from the date of acceptance, notify the applicant in writing, A, to apply for an environmental authorization and submit relevant environmental reports required in terms of Chapter 5 of the National Environmental Management Act 1998 within the prescribed period of date of the notice. B, to consult in the prescribed manner with the landowner, lawful occupier, and affected party, and include the result of the consultation in the relevant environmental reports. And C, to apply, when necessary, for a license for use of water in terms of applicable legislation. Clause 12, amendment of Section 17 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 13 of Act 59 of 2008. Section 17 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A by the substitution in subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. The minister must, within the prescribed period of receipt of the application from the regional manager, grant a prospecting right if. Paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraphs B, E, and F of the following paragraphs, respectively. The applicant has the ability to comply with the relevant provisions of the Mine Health and Safety Act, 1996, Act number 29, 1996, and E, the applicant is not in contravention of any provision of this act if the granting of such right will further the objects referred to in section 2D and comply with the amended broad-based socioeconomic empowerment charter for the South African mining and minerals industry provided for in section 100. Paragraph C. By the addition of the following paragraph, the applicant has, when necessary, submitted proof of application for a license for use of water in terms of the applicable legislation. Paragraph D, by the substitution in subsection 2 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. The minister must, within the prescribed period of receipt of the application from the regional manager, refuse to grant a prospecting right if. In paragraph F, by the addition in subsection 2 of the paragraph B of the following paragraph, C, the applicant submitted inaccurate, incorrect, or misleading information in support of the application of any matter required to be submitted in terms of this Act. Clause 13, amendment of Section 18 of Act 28 2002 as amended by Section 14 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 18 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph C of the following paragraph. C, be accompanied by a report reflecting the holder's compliance with the conditions of environmental authorization. B, by the insertion of the paragraph C of the following paragraph, C capital A, include proof of application for an amended environmental authorization, and C, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph E of the following paragraph, include a certificate issued by the Council for Geoscience that all prospecting information as prescribed has been submitted. D, by the substitution in subsection 3 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. Terms and conditions of the prospecting right and is not in contravention of this Act. Paragraph E, by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection. A prospecting right in respect of which an application for renewal has been lodged shall, despite its stated expiry date, remain in force until such time as such application has been granted and a notarial deed of renewal has been executed or such application has been refused. And A, during such remaining force, Chair, I just want to check something with the alignment here under clause 18. I just want to read the correct version there for you. Five, give me something missing there. This one here. Okay. So, Chair, I think there's just a dash missing there somewhere to link the two paragraphs to the preceding words, paragraph A. So, just to back to paragraph D, the A part, during such remaining in force, the holder of the prospecting rights shall be entitled to continue to conduct prospecting operations in terms of the existing prospecting work program, and B, where the application is granted, the renewal will take effect, and the renewal period for which application was made shall commence on the date of execution of the resultant notarial deed of renewal. Paragraph F, by the addition of the subsection 5 of the following subsection, the minister must refuse to renew a prospecting right if the applicant fails to comply with subsection 1, 2, or 3. Amendment of section 19 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by section 15 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 19 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph A and B respectively of the following paragraphs. A, subject to section 18, the exclusive right to apply for a renewal of the prospecting right in respect of the mineral and prospecting area in question. B, subject to section 2, the exclusive right to apply for a mining right in respect of the mineral and prospecting area in question. Paragraph A, actually paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph, lodge such right for registration at the Mineral and Petroleum Titles Registration Office within the prescribed period after the right has become effective. Paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraphs G and H of the following paragraph respectively, subject to section 20 and in terms of any relevant law, pay the state royalties in respect of any mineral removed and disposed of during course of prospecting operations, and H, annually submit progress reports and data of prospecting operations to both the regional manager and the council for geoscience.
What did you say about the numbering, the letter?
The numbering, Chair, if we look at the paragraph numbering, we first have A.
Section 14, section 19A.
Yes, and then...
Then we have a small A.
But that A should be a B, Chair. Because the First Amendment deals with subsection 1, the second one deals with subsection 2. So the second A should be a B, and the B should become should be a C.
Yes, you got that right?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, and then you go to the substitution of section 2, it's B.
Yes, that should be a Chair. That should be B.
You're right, okay. Correct it, sir. Then after B, it's C.
That should be C. The B should
that should be
C.
Yes. That should correct it, no?
Yes. Yeah.
And then you have D.
No.
E, F. Is that correct?
No. The alignment is a bit, it's not correct here.
Yeah.
But first, what we should have is, we have to first introduce the amendment by 14, section 19 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. Then we have A. That's the First Amendment. Then below that, we have another A. That would be a B.
Yes.
And below the A there, the B should be a C.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Okay. My teacher.
And then they have A, B, C, D.
Yeah. Chief, what we, the other paragraphs is basically the paragraph that's being rendered. So the G and H must remain G and H.
G and H?
Yeah.
Okay, alright. I get you. Okay, let's continue.
Clause 15. Amendment of Section 20 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 16 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 20 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. The holder of a prospecting right shall not, without the prior written permission of the minister, remove bulk samples of any mineral from a prospecting area for any purpose as prescribed. B, by the addition of the subsection 2 of the following subsection. Any person who applies for permission to remove and dispose of minerals in terms of this section must obtain an environmental authorization if such person has not done so in terms of section 16(4)(a) of this Act. Clause Clause 16, Amendment of Section 21 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 17 of Act 28 of 2008. Section 21 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1A of the following subsection. The holder of a prospecting right or reconnaissance permission must annually submit progress reports and data contemplated in subsection 1B to both the regional manager and council for geoscience in the prescribed manner. Clause 17, amendment of section 22 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by section 18 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 22 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. Any person who wishes to apply to the Minister for a mining right must, subject to section 9, lodge the application. B, by the substitution in subsection 2 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. The regional manager must, within the prescribed period of the receipt of the application, accept an application for a mining right if. Then we move on to D. By the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. If the application does not comply with the requirements of this section, the regional manager must notify the applicant in writing within the prescribed period of the receipt of the application. E, by the substitution in subsection 4 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. A, to apply for an environmental authorization and submit the relevant environmental reports as required in terms of Chapter 5 of the National Environmental Management Act 1998 within the prescribed period from the date of the notice. If, by substitution at the end of subsection 4B for a full stop of a semicolon and by the addition of the following paragraphs, to consult with the community and relevant structures regarding the prescribed social and labor plan within the prescribed period of the notice and submit a social and labor plan in the prescribed manner. D, where necessary, apply for a license for use of water in terms of applicable legislation. G, by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection. The regional manager must, within the prescribed period of receipt of the environmental reports and results of the consultation contemplated in subsection 4 and in terms of Chapter 5 of the National Environmental Management Act 1998, forward the application to the Minister for consideration. Clause 18, amendment of Section 23 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 19 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 23 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph E, G, and H of the following paragraphs, respectively. E, the applicant has complied with the requirements of the prescribed social and labor plan, which shall be reviewed every 5 years for the duration of the mining right. G, the applicant is not in contravention of any provision of this Act. H, the granting of such right will further the objects referred to in Section 2D and F and complies with the amended broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter for the South African mining and minerals industry provided for in Section 100 and the prescribed social and labor plan. Paragraph B, by the addition of the paragraph H of the following paragraph, the applicant has, where necessary, submitted proof of application for license for use of water in terms of the applicable legislation. C, by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. The minister must take into consideration the provisions of section 26 paragraph D, by the substitution for subsection 2A of the following subsection. If the application relates to the land occupied by a community, the minister may impose such conditions as are necessary to promote the rights and interests of the community. Paragraph E, by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. The minister must, within the prescribed period of receipt of the application from the regional manager, refuse to grant a mining right if A, the application does not meet all the requirements referred to in subsection 1. Paragraph F, by substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection. If the minister refuses to grant a mining right, the minister must, within the prescribed period of decision, in writing, notify the applicant of the decision and the reason thereof. Clause 19, amendment of Section 24 of Act 28 of 2002, as amended by Section 20 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 24 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph B of the following paragraph. B, be accompanied by a report reflecting the rights holder's compliance with the conditions of the environmental authorization. B, by the substitution at the end of subsection 2C for the full stop of the words semicolon and by the addition of the following paragraph. D, include proof of application for an amended environmental authorization and paragraph C, by the substitution in subsection 3 for paragraphs A and C of the following paragraphs. A, terms and conditions of the mining right and is not in contravention of this Act. C, approved social and labor plan. Paragraph D, by the addition after subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2A, the minister must take into consideration the provisions of section 26. There should be a full stop after 26, not a semicolon. Paragraph E, by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection. A mining right in respect of which an application for renewal has been lodged shall, despite its expiry date, remain in force until such time as such application has been granted and a material deed of renewal has been executed or such application has been refused. And A, during such remaining in force, the holder of the mining rights shall be entitled to continue to conduct mining operations in terms of the existing mining work program, and B, where the application is granted, the renewal will take effect and the renewal period for which application was made shall commence on the date of execution of the resultant material deed of renewal right. Clause 20. Amendment of Section 25 of Act 28 of 2008, as amended by Section 21 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 25 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. In addition to the rights referred to in Section 5, the holder of a mining right has, subject to Section 24, the exclusive right to apply for a renewal of the mining right in respect of the mineral and mining area in question. Paragraph B, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph, lodge such rights for registration at the Mineral and Petroleum Titles Registration Office within the prescribed period after the right has become effective. C, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph D of the following paragraph. D, comply with the provisions of this Act, any other relevant law, and the terms and conditions of the mining right. D, by the substitution in subsection 2, paragraph F, it should be 4 paragraph F of the following paragraph. F, implement the approved social and labor plan which shall be reviewed every 5 years from the duration of the mining right. Paragraph E, by the insertion in subsection 2 of the paragraph F of the following paragraph. FA, comply with the requirements of the amended broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter for the South African mining and mineral industry provided for in section 100. And paragraph F, by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph H of the following paragraph. H, submit the prescribed annual report detailing the holder's compliance with the provisions of section 2D and F, the amended broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter for the South African mining and mineral industry provided for in section 100, the approved social and labor plan. Clause 21. Section 26. Amendment of Section 26 of Act 28 of 2002 as amended by Section 22 of Act 49 of 2008. Section 26 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 of the following subsection. The minister may initiate or promote the beneficiation of minerals and petroleum resources in the Republic. Then, Chair, we have provided a new proposal in yellow, which I will now read to the committee. This is after the committee's last deliberations on the bill in order to address the issue of national development imperatives and also to address the issue of consultation. It reads as follows. 2. The minister must, A, in consultation with the minister of a relevant state department, designate any mineral or mineral products for local beneficiation, and B, after taking into consideration 1. The national developmental imperatives such as energy security, industrialization, and infrastructure development, and 2. The need to maintain viable, sustainable, and meaningful transformation of mineral industries, publish the next line should be applicable to both Roman 1 and 2. Publish such conditions required to ensure security of supply for local beneficiation in the prescribed manner. 2b. Every producer of designated minerals must offer to local beneficiators a certain percentage of its production of mineral or mineral products in required quantities, qualities, and timelines at differentiated prices as prescribed. And 3. No person may export any designated minerals or mineral products without the minister's prior written approval, which approval must be subject to subsection 2B. And in addition to the beneficiation proposal, we've also addressed the chair's concern with regard to the role of the committee, the council, to also deal with beneficiation. I'm not sure if I maybe should read that as well, just the benefit, or should we get to it? Okay. On page 25 of the handout, clause 43, it's a new section 56D. Thank you, Chair. Part of the council functions would be, it's also set out under 56B, so I'll read 56B. The council must advise the minister on sustainable development of the nation's mineral and petroleum resources, the growth and transformation of minerals and petroleum industry, and the terms and conditions applicable to beneficiation as contemplated in Section 26, including, but not limited to, differentiated pricing of designated minerals or mineral products, quantities and qualities of minerals or mineral products required for local beneficiation, and any other matter that the minister refers to the council. It's important to note, Chair, in view of the instructions, that the composition of the minister of the advisory council also is also addressed in view of the chair's concern as to who should be part of the council. 56A, I'll just read. The minister may establish a council to known as the Ministerial Advisory Council. The minister must appoint the following members of the council. The director general, who shall be the chairperson. The chief inspector. Three persons representing relevant state departments. A regional major. Three persons representing organized business. And three persons representing organized labor. These members will represent the council and also will assist the council in performing its function, especially with regard to beneficiation, as outlined under 56BC. With regard to the terms and conditions applicable to beneficiation, as contemplated in Section 26, including but not limited to differentiated pricing of designated minerals or mineral products, quantities and qualities of minerals or mineral products required for local beneficiation, and may also refer, and any other matter that the minister may refer to the council. So, Chair, those are the proposal on beneficiation. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the next one is Clause 22, Section 27 of the Principal Act.
Go to Section 27, can you just take a break for Chair? That's going to be called for 10 minutes. Okay, where's the list? 5 minutes. Miss Rosa can come and drink your tea inside then. Let's take tea for 5 minutes, come inside and we'll continue.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. No, it's not in my bag.
Oh, okay.
Can I request this, that before we continue, we go back to the concerns that are being raised now. I want you to raise them officially, so raise those concerns so that they can be either included or we make a decision on them as the committee. Then we continue as we are continuing now, and as far as we can, and from the look of things, we're going to run out of time. But in the main, when this document comes back, it must now come back as corrected. Like, for example, these other clauses that you had included here that are now out of the document mustn't be there. The correct wording, the correct insertions that we've requested as a committee and that we've agreed upon as a committee must be in the next document. And then we're going to make a request that we meet next week to ensure that whatever's left behind, we just have to deal with on a committee day next week, because I think we're finishing the last plenary is on Tuesday, that we'll either meet on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, depending on what is going to be possible in terms of an application. I don't think they'll refuse us that. Or on a Wednesday morning, that we definitely have a date on a Wednesday morning. Wednesday, ne? Wednesday is better.
Is it your intention to sign us off as a committee by the end of next week? Is that possible?
I really don't know. Is it possible that you're going to sign it off by next week? I don't think it's going to be possible. I'm just looking off at what we have already given as input so far, and to the extent that we've got right now. Myself, seated, there's a lot of issues I feel that haven't been included, for one, or have been rephrased and need an explanation on that for us to have an explanation that makes us feel secure enough to say that we can move on. But most of all, I don't think we're going to be successful in saying that this bill can pass in this term. Because we anyway at the end of Parliament now. Honourable Schmidt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with your comments, Madam Chair, but I would say more because of the fact that I've got a copy of a letter here which I would like you to consider, and that is get the Minister to the Portfolio Committee, to which he's responsible, to come and explain some of her interpretation, intentions with some of these legislative amendments. And I don't think she's available at the drop of a hat, but we have it in written form that should be requested to attend to the committee and discuss some of her views on some of these important MPRDA amendments. Even then, considering the schedule, I don't think we'd be able to finalise before next year sometime. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've handed a copy to your secretary there. Thank you. That she attends the committee to indicate your views. Thank you.
I'll have to read this letter to the committee. Okay. To the chairperson, the DA has noted with shock the reply from the Minister of Mineral Resources, Susan Shabangu, when asked how many times she has visited mines since January 2013 and what the purpose of such visits was. The Minister confirmed that she has not visited any mines since the beginning of 2013. This is of great concern considering that the challenges mining in South Africa has faced over the last 2 years. South Africa's mining sector has been gripped by labour unrest that has resulted in the tragic loss of life, more than 15.3 billion lost in mine production and 0.5% decline in GDP. As custodian of the country's mineral wealth and the legislative framework which governs it, the Minister has a duty to promote growth and development of all aspects of mining in South Africa. This is especially true for the Department of Mineral Resources, the responsibility to protect the health and safety of mine workers or people affected by mining activities. Without regular engagement with mines, its people and their conditions on ground, the Minister is negating one of South Africa's important contributors to economic growth and job creation. I believe the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources has an obligation to ensure through our oversight role that we get to clarity on this issue from the Minister. I therefore officially request that the Portfolio Committee summon Minister Shabangu to the Portfolio Committee. I trust that my request will receive due consideration and thank you for your attention in this regard. Your sincere Advocate Schmidt from the Democratic Alliance. Members? Honourable Mohai?
Chair, I don't think we would address ourselves to letter. The member is part of this committee. Could raise the issue, we can discuss the issues. And I think it's narrow to limit the involvement of the minister in visiting the mining. For what I know that the minister is part of a team with the deputy president that resolves the mining crisis, continuously participate in finding answers to a very involved process of finding solutions to the industry. As to which mining houses he meets, strict series of consultation, and so forth in dealing with those issues. I really view the letter as very opportunistic. It's really plain to the gallery. I don't want us to address issues in the future.
Honourable Tinto?
Thanks, Chair. I'm in agreement with the previous speaker, Chairperson, that this letter is going to distract our work. We know our work as a committee, and I don't remember a single day when the committee was meeting and the minister was not present and without an apology. And the apology has been accepted by this committee. Every time we receive an apology, because we understand the schedule of the minister, that the minister is quite busy. So I don't think we need to entertain the letter. Thanks.
Honorable Orema.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We're looking at a piece of legislation here which is going to confer unprecedented power and discretion on the minister when it comes to license in all sorts of areas. I find it strange that the minister is not coming to present her side to the committee. So much is going to be left to interpretation. It would be nice to know what was in the minister's mind.
It has already been said, but my plea would be, we cannot discuss it now. We have a truck full of load to do. Can't we do it, finish this one, and then come back to that letter? We cannot entertain it, please. I plead with the DA that we finish this first.
Honourable Schmidt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think we should discuss it in detail. About what I do suggest is that we conduct the meeting and then consider at the end of our meeting today whether we need to get the minister here. My view would be yes, but and it should be done because it's probably the most important amendment since 2002 the Act was accepted. And we don't have the minister. She's not, with due respect, I don't think she ever attended since 2009. There's been an apology, but she's never attended. So, and the most important, crucial amendments to this Act, in which this whole department rests, she's not come to introduce the bill to the committee or to Parliament or to any individual, as far as I'm aware. Thank you, Madam Chair. So she owes this committee at least a visit to explain her views on the bill, whether she shares her views, the reasons for the amendments, political views or economic considerations, whatever.
Honourable Mohai?
Earlier on you explained the rationale for this meeting, that is a committee stage. The committee needs to deliberate on issues as arising from our previous meeting. We respected that ruling. We sought clarity. You provided that direction. So there's no crisis that we're dealing with. The department acts in consent under the leadership of the minister. It's not independent. Views expressed here, the views of the Department of Minerals under the political leadership of the minister. She's an executing authority. This is binding. Some of the things that are expressed should not be regarded that they arise from the hidden hand. We should debate here on the strength of the legislation, on the basis of policy position that we subscribe to. It is law. It's not a democratic process. Culmination of this meeting, if we want the minister to participate in that, should be extended invitation normally, not because that there were crises all of a sudden seen by the DA. It's not true that we've got a crisis. We should discuss this as legislation. We are from public hearings. And we had lengthy process and many submissions that we received from public hearings. That's just trying, attempting to distill into legislation, submissions that were made by public legislation. So if DA holds strong views against certain clauses in the law, should not hide behind that the minister has never showed face in the committee. The minister will not be a panacea to issues that the country is facing with. So rather address ourselves to policy issues, not find cave code, and cheap political grandstanding.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was we can't just stop a meeting because of a letter. I think the DA is wrong. We are in the middle of something different, and a letter comes in, call the minister. We cannot do our things like that.
I think what is of urgency for now is the bill. The letter is here, it's been submitted, it's noted. We would at any rate would have to write to the minister to request such a decision with her, rightfully so, and agree on date. My problem right now is that Parliament is rising next week Tuesday. And that means it will be a matter of us not being able to handle it within this year. In addition to the fact that the bill itself, we are actually behind on issues of the bill, and we've still got other issues that we want to raise. We've been continuing on at this pace on our own. The department has done its part on behalf of the minister. And right now what we need to do is to conclude the issues of the bill in relation to what we want to raise clause by clause, isn't it? So I'm going to request that we continue on the pace with that letter and be noted, but raising the fact that Parliament is running next week Tuesday, and what are the possibilities of us calling her? And for now, the priority being the bill, I don't think it's going to happen. I would say the call is late. Honourable Schmidt?
Yes, Matthew, I recognise the fact that a call is late, but one would have expected, even if it's in the new year, that before we conclude the bill, that the minister come and give her views as to the content of the bill. So I'm not saying it should happen this year. In fact, I'm saying probably early next year, at least a request be made to the minister to come to committee to indicate her views, either on the original bill or a proposed amendment, but to give her view as to the contents of the bill, which is my view, required. Thank you.
I think what would even be progress is for us to rather say, be specific in what areas in the bill would you require the direct intervention of the minister, and then have a look at what is possible. I'm trolling the matter. Can we now go to the issues of what we've gone through in terms of the clauses? I think some of you wanted to raise some issues in the past clauses that we've gone through. Honourable Lorimer?
Thanks, Madam Chair. A general point, but with support from a couple of areas, some of which have gone through, some not. And that is, I'm concerned about some of the changes that are being made to the bill. I think are being done in haste. I'm concerned that there have been some fairly sloppy pieces of drafting I refer you to. What we've been told is that effectively oil and gas have been removed from Section 26 beneficiation. And yet if you go to Section 69 of the original Act, you find that oil and gas is said to be to exist under the same conditions as other minerals, in which case that would put it back into Section 26. So perhaps that's just something that hasn't been drafted yet, but needs to be done. Secondly, to go to Section 16, which we've dealt with. Now, last week, Mr. Mabuza told us that the reason for one of the changes there, taking out any interested and affected party, to read an affected party, were done specifically so that it would avoid challenges in the courts by outside groups, environmental groups perhaps, that would hold up development. Now, quite aside from disagreeing with him, I will say that this removal of any interested party might have a different effect to what he's intending. Because if you go back and look at how interested and affected parties has been defined in law, and you could look at the case of SA Sloterdijk Limited versus Samberg Sloterdijk, where the Supreme Court of Appeal looked at the interpretation of interested and affected parties, and you'll see that the Supreme Court of Appeal interpreted interested parties as a narrower concept than affected parties. And I think that if indeed that was Mr. Mabuza's intention to shut out environmental groups, he's got some problems there, because one is the interpretation of interested and affected parties is incorrect. And secondly, if you go to, you're shaking your head, sir, but that's what you told us, that you were trying to stop court cases that would impede development. And secondly, if you go to both NEMA and the Constitution, Section 38, you'll find that...
Can I ask a small favor?
Sure.
Small favor. This is now up to us, as the committee. Let's leave the department now. They've done their part. It's up to us as the
committee. Well, the point I'm making, Madam Chair...
Be specific that a particular clause, this is what I'd like to see.
Okay, well...
Start deliberating as the committee here as to what we want to see included here, and make a decision as a committee as to what are we doing.
Okay, well, if I can be specific then from what I've said, can
the department we
need to fix...
agreed in the beginning that they're not part of this today.
Okay, we need to fix 69 of the Principal Act so that it doesn't say that... it doesn't equate petroleum with minerals.
Say Section 69.
69 of the Principal Act, which I don't think we have in front of us. You have to go back to the original legislation to have a look at that. Secondly, if we go to, on our copy...
No, just hang on. We were up to Section what, 22?
No, we're on 27, I think.
We're in 27?
Yeah.
Okay, deal with...
I will flag that, but I was using it to make a more general point, which is that I think that some of the drafting is poor. But if we go to what we have dealt with on page 13, point 11, B,
Page 13.
Page 13?
Yes.
I'll go to number 11. So two thirds down the page, you'll see D, and then you'll see brackets B. Which says, to consult in the prescribed manner with the landowner, lawful occupier, and any interested and affected party.
Remember, what's in brackets there is out.
I'm proposing, Madam Chair, that be reinserted.
You are proposing that it be reinserted.
Because of this difficulty with the description of what interested and affected means. And also because it seems pointless to take that out when both the Constitution and NIMA say that anybody can bring a case. Anybody has standing to bring a case.
Members, do you want to deliberate on that point that's being suggested? On page 13, if you go down under amendment of section 16, under section 16,
section 16, as I said, two-thirds of the way down, D and then B.
There's a point there under section 16A, B, C, right? D, and then there's point 4. Point 4, then there's A, B. Now the second line is B. What, remember we agreed that what we are going through is actually indicating what we requested as changes, or what the department has given as changes, or what is going to be excluded. And we said that what is in brackets, in those block brackets, is what is not going to appear anymore in the Act. Now, Honorable Lorima is saying there should be returned. But can I just request a motivation from the legal advisors to just give a motivation on on that part, but I think it was what we said that should be excluded. I'm just thinking back now.
There was discussion on
it. We had discussion on it, and I think we said that that part, we had accepted that that part can be excluded. But anyway, let's...
Not accepted on my part, that's fair.
Oh, yours is not accepted.
No, I did not accept the exclusion at that time.
At that time?
I had intended we would come back and discuss this at a later stage. So I've gone and done some other reading, Madam Chair, to find out, and what I have read persuades me that it's causing unnecessary confusion by taking it out. In the rest of the Act, they say interested in affected parties, and there's one place they've taken it out. Now, looking at the motivation for taking it out, I don't see why it stands up, because...
But then, Honourable Lauren, I could be... I want to give you an example. I could be someone... an ordinary citizen in the country, for that matter. I'm a businessman. I'm staying in Bloemfontein in the city centre. Not in the least affected by what's going on in terms of environment and everything. And I could come and say I'm an interested party and throw a comment. Does it mean that I have to appear in that part of the Act? Or does it mean me who's staying right next to mine and there's a disturbance of my environment around me? Right? With that disturbance around me, I'm affected. I'm an effective stakeholder in the issue. That is how I get to understand it.
Indeed, I think, Madam Chair, that's how we all understood it when we had the original discussion. But I've gone and had a look what interested and affected means, and there's no clarity on it, according to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And if you go back to Section 38 of the Constitution, where it says anyone listed in this section has the right to approach a competent court alleging that a right in the Bill of Rights has been infringed or threatened, that the court may grant appropriate relief, including a declaration of rights. That's Section 32 of the Constitution. Sorry, Section 38 of the Constitution. Section 32 of NEMA says the same thing. Any person or group of persons may seek appropriate relief in respect of any breach or threatened breach of any provision of the Act, including the principle contained in Chapter 1. So it seems to me it's without effect to take those words, any interested end, out of Section 16. And whereas everywhere else in the Act it is any interested and affected party, why don't we just leave it in there?
To me, the interested sounds to be making it very loose.
Perhaps I can...
But what is the implication of that from the state law advisors? To me, it sounds like you're opening up for looseness in terms of control for that matter. Because we can't just call each and everyone now to come and have a comment whenever it suits them and then make a decision and that they're not affected by the situation.
But that's
hence
what the Constitution
the word affected.
Says. That's what the Constitution says, and that's what NEMA says, is that anybody can do this. So I'm wondering why we're now trying to prevent them against what the Constitution says and what NEMA says.
I'm just giving the state law advisors a chance.
Thank you, Jay. There's indeed a difference between interested and affected party. Interested is more broader, has a more broader interpretation, and affected party could be, it's more focused, if I can call it that, basically, when you talk about in the context that we have here. What I understand in view of the motivation, forward by the department at the last meeting was that Section 10 deals with the broader consultation. Section 10 of the Act deals with consultation with interested and affected parties. When we get to Section 16, especially Section 16.4, I think the move is more towards a focused consultation, level of consultation. And that is the reason why the word any interested and has been is supposed to be deleted from 16.4. So in this instance, we must also read this in the context of the whole of subsection 4. Firstly, there's an obligation on the regional manager to that the regional manager must notify the applicant to apply for an environmental authorization and submit reports as required under Chapter 5 of the National Environmental Management Act in a prescribed period. And even that is processed under NEMA, for that matter. There is already a process with regard to consultation for an environmental authorization because the MPRDA and the minerals the input and the environmental legislation must be aligned, and this basically speaks to the alignment. So with regard to Chapter 5, there's already taken care of that particular environmental interest groups in order to secure an environmental authorization. Now, when we come to 4B, I think the whole purpose of the amendment is to become more focused in the consultation process. That is why the consultation will only be with the landowner, lawful occupier, and an affected party, the person who's, or the party, the people who's really affected by the application that will be consulted in that regard. But I agree with the difference between the two terms. It means totally different things. Interested party, it's much broader.
Can be anybody. It could possibly even be somebody who won't even own that farm in future. And this is specific to a particular situation, hence the affected party. And not an interested party, because the interested party would probably not even have the relevant paperwork to can have a say in the matter in this particular clause.
The point I'm trying to make, Madam Chair, is if you look at the court case which I quoted, they interpreted interested and affected parties in a very different way. In fact, they interpreted an interested party as a narrower concept than an affected party. And I think that it's worthwhile having a look at that case and giving us a comment on that, having had a look at.
Well, I think in fairness, we've had a comment on that, Honourable Adam. Honourable Schmidt, and then Honourable Mube.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I still was continuing to make some points. Can I
are you commenting on this, Honourable Schmidt, on this point in particular?
Yes, Madam Chair. My concern, which follows from Mr. Lorimer's concern, is, and I phrased it before, was the environmental interest groups. Some have more input, more knowledge than those affected parties. And I'm still to have a reason provided where the reasoning behind excluding environmental interest groups, although it's not directly affected, why they're being excluded. That's my concern. I just need a simple answer to that.
Honourable Mupin?
That's all, Honourable Chair. You know, my take on this aspect is that we should start it from 4, yeah? Because those are following on 4. It says If the regional manager accepts the application, the regional manager must, within the prescribed period from the date of acceptance, notify the applicant in writing. Let me break this so that I assume that it will be better understood. Now, if the regional manager accepts the application, what is the contextual understanding of that? The contextual understanding is there's a process that has been followed, right, until we reach the point of acceptance of the application, effectively suggesting that a number of interested parties have taken or have participated in the process, or they have shown interest in what is on the table. Right. That is a contextualization of that. Then it goes further. It says the regional manager within 14 days. Now you must understand there is one that is left now. Now the interested parties have taken part, but there's this one who is now affected, who is not covered in the part that we are explained. Now it is time for the regional manager to take cognizance of the fact that there is an affected person, the occupier of the land and or the owner. Now, Honorable Chair, the point I'm making here is that you can't continuously have interested parties forever. Already the interested parties have shown their interest and have participated. And this clause tries to say that there is this person who is occupying here, who is the owner or an occupier, who needs to be looked after in terms of the interest that he has. I understand the argument that has been raised, but my point is it has already been covered and it can't be in an open-ended manner.
I still maintain that in this particular clause, which you are saying, Mr. Mwepe, I still maintain that in this particular clause, it's not relevant to have interested parties in this particular one. Right? Because there's an identified person here, the landowner or the occupier, in this particular one.
Could I suggest, Madam Chair, that I actually give you an extract of the court judgment that I'm talking about.
We can have a look at it. You can give us a coffee. We'll have a look at it.
Can I do that?
Not now.
Okay, well, can I do it afterwards, perhaps, just so that we can, if necessary, come back to this.
Yeah.
But the larger point that I'm trying to make here is that there are some problems in drafting, and that I come back again to what we were talking about in the definition when we started talking about precarious interest. And
we're going now to precarious interest.
Yeah, we're going back again, because the point that I'm making is that
Sorry, that's page? The definition. That's page 4 of the bill.
So what I still don't understand there is what exactly is the free carried interest? At what point does it come in? Does it mean, when they talk about 20% of free carried interest, does that mean before tax? Does that mean that the company who's done the drilling is allowed to pay for their drilling before that 20% is extracted? Or is it just 20% of everything that is produced? So that's my one area of lack of clarity.
Let's understand this. Page 4, free carried interest is stated there as a definition. It's explaining what the meaning of free carried interest is when we meet the bill later on, when we go further on to the relevant clause. For here, they're just telling you what the definition of precarious interest is. And that means, they say it means the interest derived from holding shares of which the holder enjoys all the rights of a shareholder but has no obligation to subscribe or contribute equity capital for the shares. In other words, it's just English that's being explained there, the definition.
Even so much, I still don't understand exactly what that means. It says the rights of a shareholder. Does that mean that...
what suggestion are you giving forth then of how the definition should go?
I don't know what they're trying to get at, so
okay,
that, I don't know. That's why I still want more clarity, because you know, does it mean a 20% of profits, or does that mean a 20% of dividends?
It could mean any percentage for that matter. The definition of a term.
That's what we should know.
I don't think we should quantify it, though, if it's a definition.
We need, you know, throughout...
You can't quantify it under a definition.
Throughout this matter, Chair, one of our arguments is that if people are going to invest, they need to know what they're putting their money into, and this leaves it wide
open. That we deal with when we get to the relevance clause.
Sure, but this is one of those...
That's the definition.
Sure, but this is one of those instances where if you don't know the definition, it could mean totally different conditions under which you're going to be putting your money here.
You know, in an English dictionary, Honorable Lorimer, when you define a word, you just explain what the word is meaning.
Yeah, but this is not a word.
But you can't presume.
It's a term which could mean anything, and this is my trying for precision.
Okay, let's hold it there. Honorable Mai.
Well, thanks, Chair. First is, earlier on during the presentation, we are advised that this section that forms the argument here is taken to or under Section 86A, under the state, but it's participation, and that is much more clarified under that section. So I'm not saying yes, so it's taken out here where it just deals with a narrow definition, but much more broader under the state participation.
That's on page?
Page 40.
Issue second.
It's page 40. Under page 40. So I think. Yeah, if that clarity is sought, maybe it could be under that paragraph.
And I think we've been taking this. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to accept we talk about it more then, but I'm making a general point that I think there are problems in the drafting and some things haven't been thought through or explained properly, and I've given several examples.
Accepted. Madam Schmidt?
Madam Chair, I think you referred to the free carried interest definition. As far as I understand, that definition is now out. It makes the problem a bit bigger than I thought it was, because we had reference to free carried interest, whether we agree with it, with the inclusion or not, is now excluded, but it is included. If it was only left there, it would have been excluded from the book, but now in page 40, clause 86A, it says state participation in addition to the free carried interest contemplated in subsection 1. So it reintroduces in 86A the notion of free carried interest, but at the same time it deletes the definition of what free carried interest is.
Maybe I can just explain to the committee. What we've done, Chair, we've deleted the definition of free carried interest, but it's now incorporated into the definition of state participation. That's on page 6. Yeah, page 6. The definition of state participation. It means the right of the state to participate in petroleum development at exploration and production operations, including inter alia. And there we have incorporated free carried interest under 1. Free carried interest, which shall in turn mean interest allocated to the state in exploration or production operations without any financial obligations on the state, and may include production sharing agreements in production operations, and representation at the joint project committee of exploration and production operations. And Section 86A deals with state participation and how it will be considered. May I read the Section 86A, Chair?
Yes,
86A. The state has, through the designated organ of state, a right to a 20% free carried interest in all new exploration and production rights from the effective date of such rights, including in production rights derived from existing exploration rights. 2. The state shall, acquiring the free carried interest, enter into a joint operating agreement with the operating petroleum company. 3. The state is entitled to a corresponding percentage of non-discriminatory votes to interest held in such joint operating agreements. The minister shall, acting on behalf of the state, appoint two representatives to the joint project committee of the exploration or production operation to represent the interests of the state. And five, in addition to a free carried interest contemplated in subsection 1, the state is, in the prescribed manner, entitled to a further participation interest of 30% in the sum of the acquisition at fair market value or production sharing agreements. In 6, the state interest referred to in subsections 1 and 5 shall not exceed a total of 50% per petroleum operation. So what we've done, we've attempted to basically deal with the free carried interest, which is now incorporated in state participation. And in terms of 86.1, the state has a 20% free carried interest in all exploration and production rights. But in addition to that, the state is in the prescribed manner also entitled to further participation interest of 30%. But that would be in the form of acquisition at fair market value or in terms of production sharing agreements. So the further 30% would be at the acquisition of fair market value category. Another one would be in terms of agreements, production sharing agreements. And if you say agreements, there has to be some sort of consensus between the parties at stake in order to acquire the 30%. But in addition to that, the total number will not exceed 50% in terms of 6. The total number as to what it add up to. With regard to the motivation from a policy perspective, I think the department would be best suited to give that advice. But from a legal perspective, this is what we have presented in view of the percentage and where it's derived from and how it's included in the bill. If the definition is not too clear, we can relook at those definitions and make it more clear for the committee. But that's the principle, the underlying principle with regard to state participation and where free carried interest comes into play.
I do have a look then if that definition can be perhaps phrased differently and bring it back to us in its revisions. Is that efficient? Honorable Kuno?
Also on page 4, when you talk about historically disadvantaged, I think the bold that you are taking out, what is written underneath there, you are actually summarizing the bold. You are not taking, remember the concern was that there's a new broad base that we have just amended in Parliament a few months ago, and we said this has to be aligned with that, unless if there's another explanation, because according to me, what you have written there, you are summarizing what the board is saying there. You are not taking care of that, because the historically disadvantaged communities before the constitution was in effect, it includes the Chinese and all that. This is, and the broad base is actually trying to take care of that. So I'm just saying that. Can you phrase it in such a way that it takes amendments that we have made in Parliament a few months ago? I'm not sure when exactly, but it was 2 or 3 months ago. Thanks.
Honourable, can you just specify the clause that you just mentioned now? Page 4, you said.
L-C-2.
L-C-2.
Is. The bold that is being taken out, what was in the bill before and what they are taking out, underneath there in C2 or C1, refers to South African citizens. According to me, when you read that, it's actually summarizing the bold. So it's not taking care of what we have underlined previously as the committee to say that they should align it with the broad-based economic empowerment that has been passed, the amendments that has just been passed in Parliament 2 months ago.
I'm looking at it. It's fine. And what did you say earlier on when we were defining HDSAs? I think there was a story about them being included or something like that. In terms of the definition. Nobody calls that, okay. The, I think there was a concern at some stage where perhaps the exclusion might disadvantage us in terms of HSAs.
The decision as it is now, I suppose, when we refer to any South African citizen that's been disadvantaged by unfair discrimination, you know, before the constitution came into place or commenced, basically it deals with unfair discrimination of South African citizens that exists. It's much broader, whereas it takes into account even the broad-based black economic empowerment provisions with regard to what should be regarded as historically disadvantaged. And we also have to read this in the context of the Act with regard to the application of, because to a certain extent it would be also could be interpreted to limit the application by making a specific reference to broad-based black economic empowerment in terms of that particular Act. What we have there is much broader, because this Act also takes into account the amended broad-based black economic empowerment charter and also the mining charter, if I'm correct, because that's one of the amendments we proposed. So it is much broader. So the way we have it, I think it will also present a more fair consideration as to what constitutes historically disadvantaged South Africans as opposed to what's in the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act at the moment. So it will have a more holistic approach with regard to how to consider unfair people, South African citizens who have been treated unfairly before the Constitution came into place. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I just, with reference to the Broad-Based Economic Empowerment Act, I see we've been provided a copy of that new bill. Now, you made it, yeah. Well, I saw a copy at least.
I'm saying you've been provided the act of the bill.
The Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Bill of 2012. That seems the bill, yeah.
The new
process, yeah. So, I've got a copy, but if you, I'll provide you with a copy, but isn't the notion then, as we discussed last week, that where last week, in summary, it looked like 20% free carried interest, plus a further possible 30% free carried interest, plus 26% BEE. Seems to be now, if I understand it, 20% free carried interest, 30% is fair market value and or production sharing arrangements, that's 30%, plus 26%. Is that very broadly a fair summation as the broad outline as far as the triple B, double E objectives are concerned?
We'll have to look at it, but in the in that particular bill that's been handed out, there's a definition of broad-based black economic empowerment, and there are different categories or components. So it could be ownership, it could be human resource skills development, it could be any of those. But what we've done, I've discussed with the parliamentary advisor this morning, that we'll look at how it fits in with the whole concept, and then we'll come back to the committee on that, because that is something that we must also like, be sure of at a heart. But the components of broad economic empowerment has various levels, and how that is at the end of the day, how it adds up, I think that's where we want to know for sure as to what we come up to.
But right, you said, because initially there's a score chart, and this score chart will indicate to you level of employment, affirmative action, equity, all these other issues, which 9 or 10 points.
But didn't take note of it so that we have it at least next week when we meet.
Then the other issue I would like to ask is on page 6, that issue of the state participation. It says, and you refer to production sharing agreements. Now, agreements can either be concluded out of free, voluntary will, or it can be included in terms of certain specific legislation. Now, that thing, one there, the Roman one, free carried interest, which shall in turn mean interest allocated to the state in exploration or production operations without any financial obligation to the state. That it clarifies, no problem with that.
and may include production sharing agreements in production operations, and may include those. That appears to give the impression that where you've got free carried interest, meaning interest allocated to the state without any financial obligation to the state, as a percentage of equity or holding, in other words, 20% of the company in equity, for instance, will be allocated to the state, versus, or, I'm not saying and or, 20%, up to 20%, I would suppose, include production sharing agreements where the whole of the company is owned by the company, and then the state enters into, a separate entity enters into a production sharing agreement for the production, the costs, or only the revenue relating to the production sharing agreement. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, either a B to the notion of state coming saying, I want 20% of your company, as it was understood until recently without any fair market value. Alternative to that would be 20% production sharing agreement. So you could return your 100% shareholding, but 20% of production should be subject to an agreement. To all.
The way it reads now, basically we're saying free carried interest, which can also include, but it's not really an all. So it can either be the free carried interest, then that free carried interest can also include production sharing agreements, but not in its, not in respect of its on its own, basically. I'm not up to 20%. It can't be more than 20%. That's how I understand it.
So just to understand you correctly, you're saying that if the state and the company agrees to have a 20% power production share agreement, it will then qualify or may qualify for that 20% terms of the free carried interest. Yeah.
Could be, Chair.
What is the next point? What is the time now? 25 to 2?
Yeah.
Members, it looks like that's as far as we can go. And we can then make an application for next week. And continue next week. And we'll carry on from section. From section 22, when we meet next week, you will get notices for the invitation to the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
He was supposed to carry on all day,
yeah.
But because there isn't any. But you switch off so you didn't like hear when this is.
Just checking, just because I'm getting those.
You know, to those of us who are still here, I made a big, big omission. It's actually Ayanda's birthday today. We should be singing to her out of all the misery that we have. Happy birthday, Ayanda. And unfortunately, in Parliament, you don't have candles to light at this stage.